Easter is coming up, and I just can't wait to have the whole family in one place. And of course, what's Easter without an awesome Easter brunch? Now, I don't know about your family, but mine is a little picky, and I really wanted to impress them with something delicious. A friend told me I should check out Total Wine & More. It was crazy! They must have every wine and beer imaginable. I told one of their friendly experts my situation, and they found me just the thing. This sparkling wine is going to be absolutely perfect for brunch, even with my picky family. I know next time I need something, I'm shopping at Total Wine and More.
Blog Talk Radio.
Contra Radio Network. Preparedness Radio. With your host, John Jeffers.
And good evening. Sunday night, the 30th of April, 2017. I'm John Jeffers here at the Contra Radio Network, giving you my show. I'm the host, founder, and executive producer here at CRN. I hope you enjoyed this weekend's broadcasting between JD and Dawn on Friday night. They were rocking and rolling. And then we had Julie Saturday night, and she came with a pretty good show, too. I enjoyed her show. I listened to them all. You know, I want to send my condolences to Mary Beth. Mary Beth is a friend of my wife, and they're former co-workers. It was Mary Beth's cousin who was KIA in Afghanistan. So let's let you know, there are soldiers out there still fighting in Iraq, in Afghanistan. Just to let you know. Guest 1417, welcome to the show. I'm glad you're here. I just wanted to send out the condolences to Mary Beth. All right. One of the things that we need to discuss, especially if you are in a prepper group, or a patriot group. In fact, my guess is you could probably tips. How's that? And you might find yourself in a leadership position, whether you want to or not. Maybe, for example, cool incident goes down and you find yourself with maybe half your group or a quarter of your group or whatever. And your leadership either will not show, cannot show, doesn't matter, they're not there. People are going to start looking around. And if you've been an outspoken advocate in your group for whatever, you know, whatever it is, people are going to start giving you the eye. They're going to look you up and down and decide whether or not you can be trusted to take leadership. Or maybe they'll just say, you know what? You're it. Congratulations. Well, we're sure you'll do a fine job. And off you go. So, Backdoor Survival has 17 tips for taking charge after a disruptive event. See, they call it disruptive. I call it a critical event. So now what? A disruptive event has just occurred in your area, and what do you do? Well, you know, you have prepared an emergency kit that can survive for a week or two, but what do you do now? You're somewhat confused. Can't think, you know, God help me. This is not the time, you know. For example, I've always thought, you know, the worst time a critical event is going to occur, and it's just going to be my luck, I'll be in the shower, you know, all soaked up, and there goes the EMP, and there goes my water supply. I'm going to be a very unhappy individual. I'm going to tell you that now. I can just see it now. Okay. But, now, this doesn't go just for an EMP. Let's just suppose it's an earthquake, hurricane, flood, wildfire, other natural disaster. You know, those thoughts and worse will jump to the forefront if the disruptive event is pandemic, nuclear, civil unrest, or where your life may be in danger, right? Now, while some think that the likelihood of such a disaster landing on your doorstep is low, it could happen. After all, that's why you're a prepper, right? That's why we prepare, correct? Yes? So given that a disruptive event might occur without warning, what will you do? Well, here are some tips and possible solutions to the, oh no, what do I do now dilemma. Take stock of the situation. Tip number one, are you and your family safe? Can you keep yourselves warm, fed, and out of harm's way? Remember, being prepared for a disaster is part of your basic responsibility. If you have been caught unprepared, this will be more of a challenge. And if you're able to completely, you know, unless you're to be completely self-sufficient, right? Follow me? Yes. See, that's again, that's why we prepare. That's why we're preppers. That's why we're survivalists. Tip number two. If it appears that you are safe inside your home, determine what the conditions are outdoors. Is it even safe to go outside, or should you just stay put and shelter in place? Tip three. Do you have a way to let family and loved ones outside of your home know that you are safe? What communication systems are functional? Telephone, cell phone, texting, internet, shortwave radio, whatever. Tip number four. Are you facing a true emergency, or do you need help immediately? If you're okay and the event is a major disaster, I don't agree with this, but place a sign in your window or on your door that says, okay. If you need medical assistance or other help, put a sign that says help or injured. I would not put any sign up, but then again, I don't run this particular website. I don't agree with that tip. Prepare for your in-the-moment mindset. Tip number five. Assume that you're going to be on your own for a while. Local services will be overwhelmed, and you should only look to them for help in true life or death emergencies. Don't call 911 to ask for information, report power outages, or to pass on information that is not life or death in nature. People do that now. Believe me. They call 911 because they're too damn lazy to dial four more numbers. Believe me. Tip number six. Plan to subsist on stored food, water, and supplies. If the situation is dire, transportation systems or power systems will be only marginally functional if they are functional at all. The shelves of the stores, if they're even open, will be empty within hours. That's why we prep. Tip number seven. Disasters bring out the best and the worst in people, so be patient with those who do not respond well and work hard to ensure that your own response is positive and constructive. Bait. After a disaster or critical event, there is a natural tendency to blame someone for the event. Well, duh. Remember, disasters are usually no one's fault. True. If they are natural disasters. And are unavoidable part of simply living in our world. Focus on the things you can control, such as helping your community heal, staying positive, and moving. Who the hell wrote this crap? You know what? I can't even stand it anymore. Backdoor survival, you're off the CRN approved list of reading material. This is absolute garbage. Are you people out? No. You are gone. I would rather just start off with another one. I'm going to find another one because I can't stand what I'm reading here. This is so much garbage, I can't even stand it. Can't stand it. I cannot stand it. I can't. I've had it. Okay, next one. I will find another one because this one is so bad I just can't deal with it anymore. So let's find something else, shall we? I don't know. General SHTF preparedness does a really good job of coming up with stuff. This is not one of them. It just isn't. I don't. No, we're not going to talk about. Now we're going to throw knives for survival? I don't think so. This might be interesting. Before I subject you to it, let me give it a quick go over here. I'm serious. I am going to give it a quick go over because I, after the last one, I just can't stand it. Okay. We're going to do this one instead. All right, bear with me. How about 6 key things to do before, during, and after a terrorist attack? Now, this one I like. It was posted on April 14th by Noah at preparednessadvice.com. I like their stuff. They say evil never rests, and as we've discovered here in the United States, evil at the hands of terrorists has become more common. We've been told by our betters that this is the new normal and that we must accept it. So, if our leaders are willing to foist this new normal on us, then it behooves each of us to learn as much as we can about the tactics of terrorists and how to respond in a way that could save lives. Terror attack survival is no longer reserved for citizens of hotspots, say, for example, like Israel or France. You could even say France because I think they've actually reached that now. Regardless, a terror attack can take many different forms, and that's the main reason preparing is difficult. After all, with the randomness, say a lone individual stabbing a complete stranger waiting in line at Burger King, what do you do other than wearing a stab vest everywhere? Recent attacks on pedestrians using a truck makes me wary of attending public events. And me too. In fact, I had to go to Chicago Saturday to help my daughter move out of her apartment. I got to tell you, I hated every freaking second of being in Chicago. I just can't stand it there. I can't. I just want to see the whole thing just bulldozed and start again. It's that bad there. I just can't stand it. However, let me get back to it. It's completely possible that future terror attacks will be of an even more lethal variety with far-reaching consequences and fatalities. Now, in the case of a chemical, biological, radiological, nuclear, or explosive device event, preparing for and responding to these is a challenge as it depends on the type and size of weapon or device used, weather conditions, and the target, high-rise, mall, school, sporting event, city, etc., among other things. So, however, there are a few key things that you can do that could potentially save your life. Watch and listen. Sounds simple, and it is. Start making a habit of being aware of your surroundings, which we all call situational awareness. You don't have to be paranoid or obvious. Just make a mental note of the exits when you go to places. Like, for example, you walk in the restaurant. One of the first things I do, and it's just me, I want to spot where the washrooms are. Then I find, no, okay, if I have to get out, where is this? Who's? And I don't look down. I look around. I want to see who's there. I don't, not that I might know them. I just want to see what they're doing. You know, if I look to the left and 15 feet over to the left of me is a guy breaking up with his girlfriend or whatever, or his wife, whatever. I don't want to partake in it. Just want to know what's going on. So for something, forever happens, I got an idea for where it's coming from. Okay. Also watch for suspicious activities and anything that is out of place. That's a game I like to call. One of these things doesn't belong. Can you tell which one it is? You know, that comes from Sesame Street. They used to do that a lot. They put a bunch of like pictures up there, and one of the pictures is slightly different, and then they sing the song. You know, one of these things is not like the others. Can you tell which one it is? Ding. That's what you're doing. You're playing that game. So, for example, like someone's wearing a heavy coat on a hot day or unattended bags and packages. Situational awareness can be both taught and learned, and you need to start doing it in order to develop the skill. Second, learn where to go. This is important. Find out in advance where you could shelter in place at the common places you go. For example, home, office, school, mall, etc. Most city and county websites list emergency shelters online, or it's available upon request. Then you just use MapQuest. Don't use MapQuest. Or Google Maps to locate the ones closest to you. MapQuest might, hey, it's dicey. You roll the dice. Maybe it's right on the money. It might be off by a bit. So ask your employer, schools, and other facility officials what their evacuation and sheltering plans are. For example, if there's a active shooter, where do I go? What do? Then choose a room in your home or building where you could hunker down with supplies and a radio for several hours or days if needed. If you are normally out and about a good deal of the day, then think about the homes of friends, relatives, acquaintances, in buildings like churches or any organizations you have a connection with. Call these your safe houses. Mark them on maps for your loved ones. Memorize addresses and directions. And take shelter there when, if you need to. Okay. Get a KI-KFM kit and dosimeters. You're thinking, what in the hell is he talking about? I'm going to tell you. These are very worthy investments in the event of a nuclear accident. I know what you're thinking, but there's no nuke plant anywhere near where I live, which is probably true for most of us. However, should you have a China syndrome go into effect, that little nuke cloud is going to ride the wind like surfing the waves off the north shore of Oahu. And it's coming, baby. So you need to know these things. KI, which is potassium, that's the chemical symbol for potassium iodide. Basically, it fills the thyroid with good iodine so your body doesn't absorb the radioactive iodine. Children, including unborn babies, are most susceptible since their thyroids are so active. Potassium iodide, KI, can be purchased inexpensively from Amazon, the CDC, anywhere. In fact, you go to the CRN Facebook pages and group page, I post where to get these. They're on sale. It's not illegal to have them. So, but anyways, here are the correct and most currently recommended dosages. Newborns from birth to 1 month. Now, you don't have to write this down. Well, you could, but remember this. Just listen. This goes to a podcast. You can go back later and, you know, write down what you want to do. So, newborns from birth to 1 month of age should be given 16 milligrams. Or a quarter of a 65 milligram tablet, or a quarter milliliter of solution. This dose is for both nursing and non-nursing newborn infants. Now, infants and children between 1 month and 3 years of age should take 32 milligrams, or half of a 65 milligram tablet, or half a milliliter of solution. This dose is both for nursing and non-nursing infants and children. Now, children between the ages of 3 and 18 year olds should take 65 milligrams or 165 milligram tablet or 1 milliliter of solution. Children who are adult size, that's greater than or equal to 150 pounds, should take the full adult dose regardless of their age. Adults should take 130 milligrams, 1 130 milligram tablet or 2 65 milligram tablets or 2 milliliters of solution. Women who are breastfeeding should take the adult dose of 130 milligrams. Now, KFM kits. You're going, what is a KFM kit? What the hell is he talking about? The Kearney Fallout Meter measures radiation more accurately than most instruments since they're charged electrostatically. Now, you can purchase the kit between $45 and $75 that are available online. A dosimeter. You're saying, what's a dosimeter? Okay, I'll tell you what a dosimeter is. You'll like it. It's easy. I've got them. I found mine on eBay. They work. They're wonderful. Dosimeters are pen-like devices that you can wear that measure the total dose or accumulated exposure to radiation as you move around. Now, they're like $45 to $65. You're going to need a charger for them, too. And it's not a charger like you're thinking in your mind that, what the charger does is allows you to read the dosimeter and reset it to zero. That's what they're talking about. You cannot see, feel, taste, or smell radiation, so detection devices are extremely important. If you have radiation poisoning, you'll feel it, but it's too late by that point. How about an expedient shelter? Now, nuclear fallout is deadly, and you may have only moments to protect yourself since it starts falling minutes after a blast. So learn how to make an expedient shelter. Taking shelter underground with shielding is best since it reduces exposure by 90%. But if you don't have that option, well, you're going to have to find a spot away from windows in the center of a home or building. Note, if the rooftop of a building next to you is on the same floor, move one floor up or down since radioactive fallout would accumulate on the rooftops. You avoid the first floor if possible since fallout will what? Pile up on the ground outside, so you don't want to be there. Set up a large, sturdy workbench or table in the location you've chosen. If no table, make one by putting doors on top of boxes, appliances, or or furniture. The idea is this. You want to put as much shielding. For example, furniture, file cabinets, appliances, boxes, pillowcases filled with dirt or sand, boxes of food, water, books, concrete blocks, bricks, etc. All around the sides and on top of the table. But don't put too much weight on the tabletop or it could collapse. You got to add reinforcing supports if needed. You got to put as much shielding as you can between you and the fallout, especially if it's gamma radiation. Leave a crawl space so everyone can get inside and block the opening with shielding materials. Leave two small air spaces for ventilation. It's about 4 to 6 inches each. One low at one end and one high at the other end. Now, this allows for better airflow since warm air, what? Warm air rises, that's right. So have water, detection devices, radio, food, and sanitation supplies in case you have to shelter for days or weeks. Now, after 7 hours, radiation levels drop tenfold. And if you could stay put at least 2 days, you've greatly improved your chances for survival. After 2 weeks, radiation levels will be very low. Time, distance, and shielding are critical components of surviving any type of a nuclear attack or accident. Now note, make a note of this, radiological incidents using an RDD or dirty bomb would not be as devastating or deadly since they use low-level radiation. The blast would probably cause more injuries and panic than the radiation. Okay. Now if you're trapped or buried in rubble, from an explosive device or natural disaster for that matter, try not to panic. Cover your mouth with a piece of clothing to help filter the dust. Do not use a cigarette lighter for any reason, since there could be gas leaks. Tap on pipe or walls so rescuers can hear you. Yelling may cause you to inhale a lot of dust. Bad news, you don't want that. Avoid crowds. During or after an incident, stay away from large gatherings or crowds, since they may be targets for subsequent attacks of one sort or another. For example, what they like to do is this. You have your initial attack. What they'll do then is they'll wait until the first responders get there and people gather around, and then they'll initiate the second attack in the same area, taking out whoever comes to aid or to rescue. I'm not, it's a dicey game. It doesn't happen all the time. We got to be aware that could happen. Again, now this just barely scratches the surface of the topic, but doing some of these things could potentially help with your survival, potentially. We all need to learn what type of disasters and emergencies and share the data with our family members, especially the kids and grandkids. Look, knowledge is power. You may never need any of these steps or items listed, but it never hurts to prepare for the unexpected. Yes? You agree? No? Okay. If you want to call in, you can. Our number is 516-453-9389. 516-453-9389. Guest 1417 is in the chat room. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Normally, we have a lot of people rolling, but, it's a Sunday night. And not everybody's here. That's okay. That's why we do this because of a podcast later. One of the things we did want to talk to you about, and we were at the beginning, let us look. We've talked about situational awareness before. Let's take a quick glance about details. how to establish multiple safe houses in times of need. This is kind of interesting. Now, the Survival Mom, I like their stuff. Survival Mom has some pretty good stuff. And generally, they're pretty much right on the money here. So what I want to do is let's talk about this. This is important stuff, I think. If you've never done it, it's okay. We're here to tell you. This is how to do it. So from Survival Mom, published on November 4th, 2013, comes this joy of information. The Survival Mom wrote, yes, she said, a few years ago, she had the opportunity to speak before a large group of first responders and emergency planners for the state of Arizona. She was leaving the conference room. A gentleman came up to me and began explaining to me the plans for evacuating Phoenix. This is 2013. And he says, there are none. Okay. Phoenix, like many American cities, is massive in size, both in population and geographic. Rather than trying to get everyone out of Phoenix, which would be impossible, the plan is to move one endangered neighborhood to a safer place within the city. For example, if major flooding hit the southern part of the city, only those residents would need to be evacuated, and they'd be sent to shelters in other parts of the Phoenix area. If those evacuees have friends or relatives in safer areas, they have a bug-out location. If not, they'll be farmed out to any shelter that has room to house them. So consider the size and scope of even a small evacuation. Having plans to evacuate to multiple safe locations within your big city seems like the best possible option for those who haven't yet bought the dream bug-out location. So bug-out locations are expensive, and they're hard to come by. Many survivalists and preppers, that's kind of redundant, plan on bugging out when everything hits the fan or darn near close to it. However, most of these same people simply have nowhere to go. A true bug-out location is defined by survival experts, which I am not, nor do I claim to be one, is just another name for a second home. If the average American could afford a second home, there'd be no problem if and when a bug-out becomes a necessity. Instead, though, what if we took a lesson from the Phoenix emergency planner and rather than insist that a bug-out location in the wilds of Montana or Idaho is the only option, establish a network of safe houses within easy walking or driving distances? So here's how this might work. Assess the weakness of your home and area. Assess the most likely crises that might affect your neighborhood or city. How bad would conditions have to be before you would need to evacuate? So you got to ask yourself, how might this disaster affect the structure of my home? If the structure is no longer safe, evacuation becomes a necessity. Will it cut off access to or from our home? Might it generate looting or other forms of crime? Do I live near an area that is likely to attract criminal activity? Something else to consider, whether or not your home or neighborhood has been able to weather similar disasters in the past. If not, this might give you some direction on being better prepared. If so, are you just as prepared last time? What if the next big event is even worse? Having criteria for evacuating is really the important first step. Often people second-guess themselves over this decision, and some end up making the fatal mistake of waiting too long. Or I like to call the second fatal mistake, and that is analyzing till you're paralyzed. The second step is to consider each possible event and determine how far you would have to go in order to be safe. This is a key consideration right there. So take into consideration man-made disasters. Along with natural disasters, floods, earthquakes, tornadoes, and hurricanes, it's important to consider man-made disasters. Which of the following are most likely to occur in your area? Riots, civil unrest. These bring with them arson, looting, random violence, terrorist attack. What specifically might be targeted? A sports stadium, military installation, a dam or water treatment plant, a nuclear event, war, chemical leak or explosion. Pandemics such as Ebola, biological warfare, economic collapse, EMP or long-term power outage, wildfires, Many are caused by arson or by careless campers. How far would you have to evacuate to be safe from these events? That will give you an idea of where to start looking for a safe house. Now, include personal disasters in your planning. Personal disaster, job loss, reduction in hours, the sudden death of a loved one, diagnosis of a serious illness, debilitating injury, house fire, bankruptcy, home foreclosure. Not all of these will necessitate leaving your home, but many will. For example, if a bankruptcy and home foreclosure is likely, sooner or later, you'll need to find somewhere safe to live. If you start planning ahead, even if it's a far-fetched scenario, you won't be as panicked if it does become a reality. I got a story for you you won't believe. When I was working the streets, this happened, I guess, 2008, 2009, on the north side of Waukegan on Sheridan Road. And there's a section on Sheridan Road in Waukegan, on the north section, on the north side of town, northeast side of town there. Well-to-do houses, very nice houses, lakefront property, that kind of stuff. Kind of overlooks the lake, you know, high ground. Got there. Got a call. And I hate working this district anyways. I can't stand it. But that was, you know, it was my day to be in the toilet, so I got the call. So I got the call. Domestic in progress. Get there. Pull up to the house. Big moving truck out front. Don't see anybody. It's like, okay. Get out of the car. Start walking up to the house. Oh, yeah. There's somebody there. Wife has flipped out. And rightfully so, because apparently her husband, who knew about the foreclosure for some time, didn't tell her. So she is not only beyond, I can't even imagine what she was feeling. But I got to tell you, this guy had every bit of contempt and hate and whatever else you want to put in there. He had it coming to him. So she's got to figure something with the kids. They're there to evict people. And it's like, oh my. So yeah. Was she panicked? Absolutely she was. Was she beyond angry? Oh yeah. She had a right to be. Because this was sprung on her literally as the eviction was taking place and the movers were there. Can't imagine. Anyways, true story, by the way. In case of a wildfire or nuclear event, you'll want to be on the road to safety as quickly as possible. So where are these safe locations? Where are they? Now, at some point, you'll need a map in order to start listing multiple safe houses. These should be located far enough away so they are not to be in the same type of immediate danger as your primary home. For example, if you live in an area that is susceptible to flooding, make sure you have a safe place to go that is out of the danger zone. For each most likely scenario, determine how far away is far enough to be safe and start your safe house search there. Possibilities. The homes of family and close friends. Not many people have that, but commercial buildings you own, have permission to access, are owned by friends and family, churches, extended family, even those you may not know well. Contacts through any organizations you belong to. Timeshares. If you have any banked weeks, these could come in handy. Hotels. Make sure they allow pets if you have them. Or campgrounds. Keep a list handy of all these possible safe houses along with phone numbers. Now, discuss your plans with any individuals involved and offer your home as a refuge should they be the ones having to flee. Get prepped before you have to. I don't know about you, but if beloved family members showed up at our doorstep and you have a place to stay, we'd make it happen. That's what family is all about. Well, it depends. Depends on who the family is. Depends which family members. You know what I'm saying. That's true. And yes, I've already told the wife there are some members of both our families. Well, you should have prepped. Instead of laughing and making snide comments at myself and others who do prep, perhaps you could learn how to do it on the run. You didn't want to listen to it before? Yeah, sure as hell ain't going to take advantage of mine. But that's me. However, if the crisis dragged on, eventually we'd have to start thinking about the expense of providing room and board to these extra people. It's not being selfish. It's just realistic. Now, you'll be far more welcome at safe houses if you've, one, first asked permission to stay there in case of a disaster, and second, if it brings cash to help with expenses, or you stored food, medicines, bedding, other survival supplies in the corner of the garage or spare room. If a disaster gives notice of its imminent arrival, for example, a hurricane, you have time to make a trip to your safe house, deliver food, supplies, bedding, etc., and just in case, you have to make a run for it. So in other words, plan on being a freeloader. Survival has never been a one-size-fits-all adventure. It's all about being flexible, thinking on your feet. Multiple safe locations will give you maximum flexibility when the going gets so rough that it's time to get out of Dodge. What do you think? Yes? No? Gust 1641 is in the chat room. Welcome to the show. Glad you're here. So there. Something else we wanted to talk about. Where'd it go? Yes, we're going to do this one. We did talk about situational awareness. We've talked about it a few times. For those of you that are new and you don't know what the hell we're talking about, well, we're going to talk about it again. Well, situational awareness, 12 things that you need to know. You're going to need to know these things. One thing, you know, there's something else I want to discuss. Guys, you need to listen to me carefully when I tell you this. Take it from me. Been around a while. I'm going to give you free advice. When it comes to women, listen to women's intuition. Do not dismiss it out of hand. Remember, women's perception is different than men's perception. And I'm telling you now, just, you know, listen to women's intuition. Is it right 100% of the time? No, but you need to listen to it, because the one time you don't, you won't hear the end of it, my friend. So I'm serious. That's what I'm talking to you about. So that's one thing you need to know. Now, you need to be talking about situational awareness and how my perspective has changed over the years. Who wrote this, by the way? It was written December 28th, 2016 by nameless person. Okay. Today I've come to the conclusion that without the constant reminders that we use to receive, I've dropped my guard to a large degree. This is a mistake. I need to step up my game and pay much more awareness to situational awareness. In the town in which I live, homelessness is becoming a problem and street crimes are up. The demographics of a given town or neighborhood can change dramatically within a matter of months, and all of a sudden, the home you grew up in can be smack dab in the middle of the bad part of town. Now, if there was one book all women in particular should read, it is one by a former CIA operations officer called Street Smarts for Women. It contains chapter after chapter with information about situational awareness, reading people's body language for danger, and a lot more. So, in my own life, I have used the following strategies to stay aware of the people and events around me. Basically, it is knowing what is occurring around you and using the information to avoid trouble or to prepare for it before it strikes or happens. Tim is in the chat room. Tim, welcome to the chat room, my friend. Glad you're here tonight. Number one, never. Everybody knows this. Never sit with your back to the door in public buildings. Make sure you have an unobstructed view of who's approaching you, preferably with your back to the wall. You know, you could ask any cop, they're going to tell you that. That's one of the oldest ones in the book. But you know what? Sometimes it's not going to be possible for you to sit that, you know, with your back, you know. You just can't. You might have to sit with your back to the door, okay? So, next best thing. If that's the case, you know, I might have to, you know, sit somewhere where I have to use a reflection, whether it's a window. At night, if it's lit up at night, you can see the reflections of what's going on inside the restaurant. If it's daylight out, you won't be able to use that glass. All right? Because light reflected outside, if it's brighter outside, you won't be able to use the reflection inside. If it's dark outside, you can use the reflection inside to watch what's going on, okay? Always know where the exits are. When walking down a city street, know who is behind you. You can often use the store windows to see behind you. Always watch your back. One thing I've noticed, don't look down. Look up. Look around what's going on. You pass somebody, and I do this all the time, and you should do it too. Look them in the eye if possible and walk you by. Give them a quick glance up and down. You may not see anything, but they may see you. Look at them. That's probably enough to keep them away from you because they know that you're watching, you're prepared. They don't like that. Don't be obviously looking over your shoulder, but pay attention to somebody who is. That's unusual. Pay attention to anything out of the ordinary. We talked about this, playing the game. One of these things is not like the others. Remember? Feel free to profile. Now, it may not be kosher for the TSA or some law enforcement units, but as a citizen, if there are individuals who make you feel unsafe for any reason, quickly find a way out of the area. Don't walk around looking at your cell phone. You know what I'm talking about. We've seen the army of zombies. Some guy in Southern California was so engrossed in his the other day that he walked off a cliff. It is not just people you pay attention to. It's also objects that are out of place. For example, what about that strange backpack sitting on the street corner? Know what is normal in your area where you are. If anything or anyone seems out of place, take notice. Look for people who are acting pushy, authoritative, overbearing, uncomfortable, or just out of place. Watch the hand. If people are armed with a gun or a knife, they will often pat the area to be sure it is still there. Don't assume women are safe. Women can be more terrifying than men. If they go to war, watch out. If you see a dangerous situation starting, don't be afraid to walk away and call someone. When you're driving, pay attention to your rearview mirror and see if anyone is following you. Now, look, this is basic information. It sounds simple. But to get good at it, you need to practice. Most people start out by trying to have their head on a swivel and end up attracting attention. Don't be obvious. When you leave an area, talk to your wife or children and see what they notice. You can make a game of this. Don't look like you're paranoid, but at the same time, be a little paranoid. Just because you're paranoid doesn't mean they're not after you. So you have to attend to start paying more attention to what is going on around you. Suggest you do the same. Okay? You got to do that. And that's just some of the things. Tim is in the chat room. He says, yeah, it's quiet in there. He says he and his buddies always argue about who has to sit with their back to the door. And look for the guy sweating. That's another thing. If it's not hot out, say it's cool. Maybe it's maybe 50 degrees out and some guy's sweating something fierce. That's because he is under tremendous stress. Tremendous stress. You know, in Israel, Israeli security forces, that's what they look for. They look for the guys who are looking around, they got their head on a swivel, and they're sweating to beat all hell where everybody else isn't. It's because right at that point in time, he is under such tremendous stress. Something's going on. As Tim points out, women can be used as a distraction. For example, you could get a woman to create a scene to have people's attention looking one way, and her accomplice may be 180 degrees opposite her direction, getting ready to initiate whatever he's going to initiate, whatever's going to go down. Follow? This is why situational awareness is important. All right. Yeah, this is not too. Yeah, we don't have a lot of people going on tonight. Let me see. No, we don't have any callers either. Wow. You know, sometimes we have this. Sometimes it happens this way. It's all right. Sometimes it just, you know, it's just the way it is. How about this one? How about 11 professions that will make you a millionaire in a post-pits-the-fan world? 11 professions make you a millionaire. You'd like that, right? This where is this? Oh, yeah. Preparednessadvice.com. You'd like this one. And the author is Noah. Noah writes some pretty good stuff. I like his stuff. When I look at today's young people majoring in things like video game design and gender studies, I have to shake my head. Many expensive degrees today almost guarantee a life spent as a Starbucks barista. As well, in a post-shit hits the fan world, these degrees will be worse than useless. The years spent in classes such as games and culture, gender and representation of Asian women, and the invention of French theory, oh my. Those hours could have been spent so much better studying things that are real, meaningful, and have true significance in the world around us, as well as having practical applications that might be of some actual help. But I digress. In the future, as we see the value of our dollar decline, increased civil unrest, although may provide occasional income opportunities for gender studies students, and a chaotic world, there are a few professions, if you will, that will reap huge benefits and income. Just to name a few. You ready? Gunsmith. In a world where violence becomes more commonplace, armed defense and offense are going to become the hallmarks of a survivor. Want to protect yourself, your family, and your property? Then your firearms had better be in working order 100% of the time. In a future in which law enforcement agencies are disbanded or barely functional, a citizen's firearm will be his or her own first line of defense. So what better career for such a time and a cool hobby for right now than becoming a gunsmith? The NRA has information about the trade and suggestions for gunsmithing schools. If you're not able to attend a school, then a good manual or two for getting started to learn advanced gunsmithing skills and basic ones can help you get started. Tim is in the chat room. He says, whiskey distiller. I go with the gunsmith one. Midwife. Now, as long as there are men and women coexist anywhere near each other, there's going to be a need for midwives and actually anyone with the skills to help birth a baby. In a real end of the world as we know it scenario, life expectancy will decrease and the lives of a mother and newborn will become more precarious. Midwife training is available across the country, including community colleges. Even a single class to learn more than just the basics of childbirth could easily save lives. And if nothing else, a good midwife's guide to pregnancy and birth is worth adding to your library. How about an herbalist? As Obamacare has made the medical field a virtual landmine for medical professionals with onerous regulations of every type imaginable, many have left the field. Now, imagine trying to find a random physician for a major medical crisis when everything hits the fan. That's when alternative medicine will truly come into its own. My family has experienced good results with certain herbal treatments, for example, slippery elm lozenges for my daughter's cough, for one. My wife takes Boswellia to help with a chronic cough during allergy season. It works nearly as well as an OTC drug like, Delsym. I'm very aware that herbs can and do cause side effects, which is why becoming a trained herbalist would be a darn good profession and in a grid down world. Additionally, start growing medicinal plants to help with common ailments such as headaches, stomach aches, and to boost overall immunity. Right now, my family buys herbs in capsule form and occasionally teas, but in the future, Amazon Prime won't be there for that quick 2-day shipment. So one of the goals is to build up our backyard herb garden. Mm-hmm. Beautician. I know. Just hear me out. A few months ago, a student at Prepper's University, I had a chance to hear a Bosnian war survivor, Selko, talk about the realities of trying to live life on the front lines of a war. He was asked if during that time period the women still tried to look attractive. He chuckled and said, yeah, the women still did their best to look good. Now, in my own personal, albeit somewhat limited experience, I've noticed that women always, always want to look their best. Before the birth of our second child, my wife found an attractive nightgown that would look good in photos after he was born. She fluffed off her hair, put on some mascara. Crazy, yeah? But you can't argue. What's that? Congress reaches agreement on a $1 trillion measure to fund the government. Well, what do you know? What do you know? Let me get this. They want it, so they're going to fund it. Huh? Okay. $1 trillion. Man. Let's get back to it. All right. So, yeah. But you can't argue with the multi-billion-dollar beauty business, and chances are, no matter what happens, women will still want a haircut and, if possible, color and highlights. Men, too. Some of them, maybe. Forager. Other piece of information I picked up from Selko's talk was the importance of foraging. In his town, one old woman knew how to find a few edible plants and was able to forage for them to provide food. Depending on where you live, start researching the edible plants in your area, but be very careful of this. Now, some plants, the leaves may be edible while the roots are poisonous, or in some other cases, the plant parts aren't edible until cooked. So learn more about foraging. One of the best, and written by a local Texas foraging expert. So whatever you can forage, you can be either dried or dehydrated or canned to preserve it for a longer-term storage. Seamstress. If you've ever traveled in very poor parts of the world, you undoubtedly notice the well-worn clothing, but you know, and that's to put it politely. Modern laundry facilities aren't usually available, so clothes quickly become faded, tattered, and frayed. In such a world, what if you could alter clothing to different sizes or use old jeans to create a brand new pair? Not many have these skills anymore, and they would be worth learning. It's also a good reason to stock up on sewing supplies, thread, needles, pins, fabric, bobbins, and a treadle sewing machine. Excuse me. And now for the vices. The vice business, think gambling, drugs, liquor, prostitution, have always done well, regardless of economics. There will always be customers for these and things, and sadly, as times and people get more desperate, those who make a living this way will thrive at the expense of those addicted to their products. Obviously, I'm not recommending any of these professions, but it's good to keep them in mind. If and when you see society deteriorating, you'll see an increase in the business of vice, and along with that, a rise in crimes of all types, including organized crime. With law enforcement scattered or out of the picture altogether, what else would you expect to happen? So gambling. People either hooked on the thrill of the roll of the dice or in dire need of just one lucky roll will provide plenty of customers for even primitive gambling establishments. Drugs. Across the globe and throughout time, people have found ways to get high on one thing or another. Back when I lived in the Pacific Islands, chewing on the betel nut gave a good buzz, if you're into that sort of thing. Mushrooms and plants of all kinds have been used to produce hallucinations, euphoria, excitement, and a host of less positive effects. The end of the world, as we know it, absolutely will bring an increase in drug production and sales, along with more addicts. Liquor. This is for you, Tim. I suppose this may not be a vice, depending on which side of the aisle you sit, but I include it in the category because it's where it's typically belong. Back in the 1930s, my wife's hillbilly relatives had a front porch still. And as far as I know, they may still be producing homemade moonshine. However, home brewing has come a very long way since then. And if you know how to make a decent beer, wine, or some other alcoholic concoction, you could be set for life. Of course, historically, organized crime usually wants a piece of this type of action, so that life could be shorter than you might expect. Prostitution. As a father, this one bothers me a great deal. I've seen the devastating consequences of child prostitution in East Asia and human trafficking here in the United States. In a desperate world, one's body becomes a form of currency, and many families have sold their sons and daughters simply to stay alive a few more months. In many parts of the world, this isn't a lifestyle, it's survival. Knowing this, prepping and moving forward toward a self-reliant life becomes even more important. I never want one of my family members faced with no other option just to stay alive. In a grid-down world, you better believe pimps and prostitution reigns will flourish. Pornography, yet another soul-stealing profession. I see no reason why it wouldn't continue to thrive in a world with little law enforcement and individuals of all ages willing to risk anything in exchange for food, water, and shelter. So how will you earn a living in a post-grid down world? Many skills and professions that will be in demand in that type of a world. We've just talked about a few. If you're trying to figure out a good second or third set of professional skills to acquire, think about life's necessities: water, food, staying healthy, security, shelter, and then what skills or knowledge you could begin to acquire related to those areas. I've often thought that anyone with a green thumb could sell compost, seedlings, and save seeds. Handyman types can fix anything that will be in demand. Just be sure you have the tools and parts for repairs. At some point in a post, the end of the world as we know it, education will have to continue. So anyone with the ability to teach and a supply of textbooks and books of all kinds would be in demand. It's always smart to have additional income sources, as these could come in handy now as well as in an uncertain future. Yes? With Tim Licker. Yeah, he says, I'm sipping green tea and raw honey. Yeah, I hear you, pal. I got pH water, high alkaline water. That's what I'm drinking tonight. Okay. What else have we got here? Let's see what else we have here. Let's see. Is anybody want to call in? Nope, no callers. That's all right. Sometimes we get that. Guess what? Guess what I found? Now, I want you all to know, if you're new to the show tonight, one thing you have to realize is this. After the election night, I saw the numbers from my show go down drastically. Drastically. They're just now starting to come up again. And when you're saying, John, what are you talking about? How drastically? Well, I can tell you this. The night before the election, we did a show. And I had 26,000 listeners a month. A week after the election, I was down to 5,000. Now we're slowly coming back up again. Slowly. And by slowly, we got 7,200 people a month that listen to the show. But, thankfully, here are seven reasons to keep prepping because Donald Trump is president. So, this is written by Noah. I well remember the election of 2008. It came at the beginning of the crash of the housing bubble, which affected my family business in a big way. With a President Obama on the horizon and the economy going down the tubes, I felt very uncertain about the future. So my wife and I became preppers, and it was a smart move. Now I'm hearing the prepper-minded folks who think they can relax their prepping because Donald Trump has been elected president. Like Obama, when he was elected, Trump doesn't have much of a record when it comes to actual governing, but he speaks with confidence about making America great again. I guess that's enough to convince a lot of people that the good old days are here again and they can put away their bug-out bags and freeze-dried food. Me? Not so sure. And I'll keep prepping. Thank you very much. I've given this some thought, and here are some reasons my family and I will continue on as preppers, as well as I think you should also. Number one, S finds a way of hitting the fan in our personal lives, no matter who the president is, whether it's a job loss, devastating family illness or injury, or a house fire. It pays to plan ahead and prep for those kinds of events. Not ready for these types of events? This is the best overall family prepping book he's ever read. I know which one it is, and I'll tell you in a bit. Number two, natural disasters and extreme weather events will continue to happen. Right now, the story is the news is wildfires, something this blog has covered in depth in our number three, there are world events that no president can prevent. This is what concerns me most. Too many wild cards out there. Belligerent countries such as Iran and North Korea have become stronger and more confident in their boldness toward the United States. And I'm not so sure they'll back down easily just because another man sits in the Oval Office. I can't remember a time when the Middle East was so unstable. Right now it's a powder keg that I believe has been lit. It's a matter of time, maybe just months before we see the explosion. Number four. A massive financial crisis looms, and Trump has inherited it. There's no way of knowing how he will manage the coming crash. Mind-boggling debt cannot continue piling up forever. I worry for the future of my kids and the huge tax burden they'll assume when they become adults. There's just no way to avoid it. Number five, the world balance of power has changed since 2008. China and Russia have been flexing their muscles, looking to expand their influence and borders. China has actually built artificial islands in order to establish military buildings and airstrips. Sounds like they may have a long-term aggressive plans for the region. The balance of power that existed for so many decades has changed, and the world stage is very unstable. Number six, America has radically changed since 2008. The country is more divided than I have ever seen in my four decades here on Earth. I will add 5 decades for me. Black Lives Matter isn't going away anytime soon, but it has. But we'll continue to cherry-pick events they can exploit for the purpose of stirring up rage. The country is racially divided, perhaps beyond reconciliation. Hordes of immigrants have overcome our education system and stretched the limits of our country's social services. Nothing good can come of a nation that is so fractured from within. Number seven, it seems that Trump's political foes aren't going to accept and move on. I fully expect the riots that followed the election, and there's more to come. At some point, growing civil unrest will affect many of us in ways we can't yet imagine. Also, it seems there is a movement to upend our political process with pressure to remove the Electoral College system and change longstanding process and rules. Wherever there is instability, chaos is the result. Seven reasons for continued prepping in spite of Donald Trump being elected president. Oh, we got there, Tim. Oh, yeah. May 1st. I put out a lot of stuff on that already. If you have not, find it. What else we got here? Yes, that might be a good idea. Let me check here. I'm going to give you 15 over-the-counter medications preppers need to stock. Number one is ibuprofen. It's used to treat pain and inflammation, including headaches, earaches, sore throats, sinus pain, stiff neck, muscle strains, menstrual cramps, arthritis, and back pain. It is useful for reducing fevers, but is not good for most stomach pains. Number two, acetaminophen, also known as Tylenol. Acetaminophen is used for many of the same conditions as ibuprofen. However, it will not reduce inflammation. It can be rotated on a three-hour basis with ibuprofen when pain is severe. Combined with ibuprofen, it will work similar to codeine to reduce more severe pain. It should only be done on the advice of a doctor, which I am not. Nor do I play one on TV.
Well, I don't.
Aspirin, 325 milligrams. In addition to ibuprofen and acetaminophen, you should stock aspirin. Aspirin has been used since the late 19th century as a pain reliever, fever reducer, and anti-inflammatory. However, it has the ability to thin blood, so it can be used to treat people who need anticoagulants or have heart problems. If you have high blood pressure, do not take the aspirin. As it thins the blood, what happens? The pressure rises, so don't do that. Number four, diphenhydramine, also known as Benadryl. An inexpensive antihistamine, diphenhydramine is primarily used for drainage due to respiratory infections and nasal allergies in both adults and children. It is also indicated for allergies, hives, itching, including itchy rashes such as poison ivy. This will make some people sleepy. Number five, loratadine, also known as Claritin and Allivert, antihistamine used for treating allergies. It does not make people sleepy. Stock dissolving tablets for children and the elderly. Loperamide, also known as Imodium. And believe me, when the grid goes down, you're going to be needing a lot of Imodium. Believe me. It's a very effective over-the-counter medication for diarrhea. It has been said that a single Imodium thrown into a swimming pool could turn the water to cement, but this is not true. So stock in both adult and children's strengths. Sudafedrine, also known as Sudafed, very effective at relieving congestion of both the upper and lower respiratory tract due to infections, allergies, chemical irritations, and mild asthma or bronchitis. Not recommended for children under 6. Number 8, meclizine, also known as bonine or dramamine. This is an antiemetic drug. It's available both over the counter and by prescription. It relieves nausea, vomiting, motion sickness, and vertigo-like dizziness. Number 9, ranitidine, also known as Zantac, omeprazole, 20 to 40 milligrams, also known as Prilosec, cimetidine, 200 to 800 milligrams, also known as Tagamet. All of these over-counter medications are available for treatment of heartburn, ulcers, and other acid-reducing conditions. Again, when the grid goes down, you're going to need these by the caseload. Ranitidine is inexpensive and well-tolerated. If you find yourself experiencing stomach pains and throwing up blood, well, anyways, you should probably get it. Number 10, hydrocortisone cream. Oh, that's right, Tim. Benadryl is also usable for snake bites and bee stings. Absolutely correct. I forgot about that. If you have pets and they get stung by a bee, well, you usually give them Benadryl. That will take care of it for you. All right. Number 10 is hydrocortisone cream. The 1% version of hydrocortisone is the strongest over-the-counter steroid cream available. It is safe for use of both adults and children in treating inflamed or itchy rashes such as eczema, poison ivy, diaper rash, and other genital irritations. Number 11, triple antibiotic oil, Neosporin, Bacitracin, Bactroban. Triple antibiotic oil is normally applied at the site of injuries to prevent infections. It should be noted that triple antibiotic ointment won't cure deep infections. Got it? Clotrimazole, Lotrimin, Miconazole, Monistat. You're going to need these. These antifungal medications can be used to treat athlete's foot, vaginal infections, ringworm, and jock itch. Mucinex, also known as glycerol glycolate, or formerly known as guaifenesin. This is a drug which reduces the thickness of mucous secretions and respiratory infections. It helps your body to expel phlegm. It is available in liquid or tablet form. Calamine lotion. If you don't know, if you've never heard of calamine lotion, I can't help you. This is useful for the treatment of poison oak or ivy. These conditions may become much more common after a disaster due to spending more time outdoors. Number 15, Gatorade powder. While this would not normally be listed with over-the-counter medications, it can be effective for rehydration. Now, the above over-the-counter medications will let you treat many different conditions and not cost you an arm and a leg. Watch the sales. Buy generics whenever you can. I'm not a doctor, and I'm not giving you medical advice. I'm telling you what you need to buy. Use these medications as directed on the packaging or as advised by your doctor. Got it? So if you decide to do something stupid with it, don't say, well, John told me to. No, I did not. I said you stock it up. How you use it is up to you. Well, it's true. I don't want to talk about that one. Let me see about this one. We're throwing out a bunch of information tonight. Lots of information. That's all right. Let me see something here real quick. Yes, I thought. You know what? You know what we're going to do? We're going to call it a night. I don't get to normally call an early night, but sometimes it happens that way. Sometimes it works out that way. That's okay. That's okay, Frank. You know, sometimes like I said I don't get to always call an early night, but I'm going to tonight. It's okay. A lot of people listen to the broadcast on their way to and from work. So why not? Yeah, we'll call it. We put out a lot of information out tonight. I don't claim to be an expert prepper because, first of all, I don't believe there is such an animal. I just don't believe there are. So what's Terry doing? Looks like Terry is reporting they're being hammered in Missouri with flooding in some locations at record levels. Yeah. Okay. Terry is going to be on the show Wednesday. He's making observations. This is going to be good information. So, yeah. So, Wednesday night, we'll have Terry on, and it'll be very interesting to see what his observations are. I'm going to let him rock and roll with it. J.D. Souther, I sent you a personal message. I expect you to answer it. Anything else going on? Mary Jo, yes, thank you for what you participating. I appreciate it. I got your messages. Thank you. Well, it's like Mary Jo checks in. All right. Terry, as far as I know, Terry is still above water, but places around him are getting evacuated. They're just getting hammered. Gary Moe reported a little over four inches of rain by him down in Louisiana. So, and don't forget to the ground's already reached its saturation point, so it's probably just building up now. All right, we're going to call it evening. Tim, thanks for checking in tonight. Appreciate it, buddy. Good night in the chat room. Thanks for checking in. As for the rest of you, I'll be back on Wednesday night, 8 o'clock. For the roundtable report, we're going to have Terry on because he'll tell you about it. I look forward to hearing his report. In the meantime, I'm John Jeffers for the Contrary Network saying, hey, thanks for checking in tonight. I really appreciate it. And hope you can use the information that we use. For my Prepper and Patriot friends out there, I tell you this, be safe, be alert, and be vigilant. I'm John Jeffers with the Contrary Network saying good night and thank you for joining us.
Easter is coming up, and I just can't wait to have the whole family in one place. And of course, what's Easter without an awesome Easter brunch? Now, I don't know about your family, but mine is a little picky, and I really wanted to impress them with something delicious. A friend told me I should check out Total Wine & More. It was crazy. They must have every wine and beer imaginable. I told one of their friendly experts my situation, and they found me just the thing. This sparkling wine is going to be absolutely perfect for brunch, even with my picky family. I know next time I need something, I'm shopping at Total Wine and More.
Welcome to Total Wine and More. It's much more than a wine store. It's the eighth wonder of the world.
When people talk about Total Wine and More, they get a little carried away. We're just a big friendly place run by people with a passion for wine and beer. See, we travel the world to find the best wines from the best regions, and we sell them at the lowest prices anywhere.
And friendly, helpful experts at every turn.
You know what? Maybe we are the eighth wonder of the world.
Shop in store or online at TotalWine.com.